You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. Now, the Go Wild app has added some really cool and exciting functionality to their app. And the first one I want to talk about is the Near Me function. And basically what this does, it allows you to engage and connect with people in your area. You guys can talk about gear. You guys can talk about hunting areas. You guys can talk about what's going on in the woods. And it just allows the users to be more of a community and connect easier. The second part is the Gearbox. And what the Gearbox is, it is an opportunity for the users to not only see reviews on products and see what the Go Wild community is using in the field, what products they're using, but it also allows you guys to purchase up to 150,000 products. There's a shopping function on it. So check out the Go Wild app. If you haven't downloaded it to your phone yet, you need to, and you can do that at any app store that is currently available. Go Wild. It's an awesome app. Check them out.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas. Got my boys with me today.
Andy Humfeld.
Michael Winstead.
How's it going, fellas?
What's up, man?
It's going.
Are you a little hurt right
now? What are you sad
now?
For?
A little bummed at the moment.
Well, why don't we tell everybody why you're a little bummed at the moment? What happened to you over the weekend, sir?
Well, first of all, we leave for our big annual elk hunting trip here at the end of August, and we're 28 days out from the time of this recording, and as of right now, I have no bow.
Yeah, we went to the, it was a great time, by the way, the Marshall 3D Bud Shoot.
Yep.
And decent-sized group of us went and had a fun time together.
Real fun.
We use those, well, not you. We use those for several reasons. I mean, it helps us get ready for the season. We get to compete with each other. I don't turn my scorecard in ever.
That's because I beat you.
You did not, and you weren't going to either.
Definitely not.
And then you got a DNF because what happened to you?
So we stopped halfway through. It was two ranges, 15 targets apiece. Shot the first 15. Stop, eat a little lunch. We started the second 15, and I think I went first on the first target.
Yeah, you were first.
Yeah. I knocked an arrow, drew it back, and as I'm holding it, about to release, it just a big just pop. So I stopped. I mean, I didn't know what it was. Look at the bow, nothing. I kept my draw the whole time, just right. I kind of looked back at it. Didn't see anything. It looked just fine. And I went ahead and let the arrow go, and the arrow did not make it to the target.
It was like 15 yards short.
It just kind of just like flailed its way out there, which I'm glad, we were in a kind of controlled environment. It was safe. I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
Well, looking back, now that you know what was wrong with your bow.
I was lucky.
Yeah, because, you looked it over, and I mean, there were 15 people sitting there watching.
Yeah.
Behind us, just because we were the first group to go, and everybody heard that. And we looked the bow over real quick, and
even the group in front of us, once we caught up to them, they said, "What did you guys hear pop back there?" It's like, "Oh yeah,
it was my bow.
It's my bow." So what happened was once we got down there and found my arrow and everything, I really inspected the bow, see what happened, and one of the limbs, it's a split limb bow, on the bottom, it just splintered. It didn't like snap. It didn't like completely break.
It obviously popped.
It just like splintered up, and that was it for the day.
So not only were you not going to beat me, then you couldn't even finish.
Yeah, that honestly hurt more than the bow, is just not being able to finish the event, because it's only once a year we go to the Bud Shoot, and we had everybody there. It was a good time. And
I mean, that's the one. Except for Micah. I couldn't make it because I had.
Not everyone. Sorry, yeah. Micah.
Anyone that was important.
Yeah, like your dad always goes to that one.
My dad was there with us.
Usually it's the whole crew. So
It's fun. You stayed with us the whole time, but had to carry around a broken bow and
lick my wounds.
Yeah, it sucks.
But as of right now, brand new limbs are on their way. Should get those here in a few days. Going to run them down to the pro shop, have them put them back on and give it another go.
Yeah.
I do have – I'm left-handed with a 31-inch draw length, so selling my old bows is a difficult task. So I do still have my old bow that I've already kind of put back together and got it ready to rock and roll just in case, which, I mean, I can still go. I'm going to Colorado. It's happening.
I'm going to go if I have to just throw a knife at it, right?
Throw a spear. But no, I should have it put back together in time. It's just getting comfortable with it again.
But Athens, your bow was an Athens archery bow.
Yep.
Or is it Athens archery?
Ridge 34.
You called him this morning. This happened Saturday. Or no, Sunday.
Happened on a Sunday.
You called him this morning, noon. Which we're recording this on a Monday currently. But they're going to send the limbs to you by tomorrow?
So they were put in the mail today. So I called them the first thing this morning, and they said, they asked what, like, number limbs and everything, and mm-hmm. got all my information. They said, all right, this is what I have in stock. Give me your address. And it's on its way. The Athens Bows, I mean, they have a lifetime transferable warranty, so it wouldn't matter if I sold this bow to Joe Blow from Arizona. That warranty goes with him on any of the manufacturer craftsmanship part of it.
That's cool.
So
yeah, sucks. I mean, sucks to have limbs splinter on you like that.
Right.
On a new bow, but
it could have been worse. You know, you could have. I mean, those things can explode and cause some serious damage.
So. That's what's good about going and doing these shoots, though. I mean, if you just got your bow out and then we went hunting.
Yep.
That happens on the mountain. Hope potentially. And that's why we shoot our bows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get practice, and then if there's anything wrong, it's going to rear its ugly head here.
Right.
Hopefully.
It would really suck the one pull out there that you might make is the one that happens. But
yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'd already shot the first. It wasn't like I just pulled it out and it broke. I mean, we were just shooting the entire front half. But things happen, is what is. I talked to the guy. He's actually an engineer. Used to manufacture some of the bows. And at first I was like, all right, what kind of crap? But explain this is how common it's an uncommon common thing. If a bow has problems, it's a manufacturer. I mean, there's no way to tell if a limb has some fibers messed up.
Right. So. Yeah.
But they're making it right. I mean, I couldn't ask for, once I called them, they said, yep, give me your address. They're on their way.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, let's get to the episode.
Yeah.
Today we got Midwest Wildlife, Ryan, Dustin, and Tristan come on, and we talk about property management, land management, just summer projects, just all kinds of fun stuff. We go down several rabbit holes. rabbit holes, and we have a good time. So we'll get into the show, and anything else, fillers?
Hope you enjoy.
All right. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. All right, welcome to the show, everybody. Got a good one today. Today we got three of the guys from Midwest Wildlife.
Full house tonight.
Yeah, six of us sitting around a little table in my basement. Sounds fun.
You are the shortest.
No doubt about it. I don't know. Tristan, you're kind of short too, right?
Bringing him in immediately.
What the hell, man? We got Ryan Greco, Dustin Williams, and Tristan Williams with Midwest Wildlife with us today. And we're going to talk some summer property management stuff, some summer, some things you should be doing this summer. So
yeah, they got, what'd you say? You have a farm and then you got an extra 80 acres that just tied into it that y'all just picked up. Is that how that was going?
Yeah, we did on our west border. 80 acre patch of timber came up and we went ahead and got a hold of it, turned a 160 farm into 240.
Perfect.
And
awesome opportunity.
Yeah. It was one of those deals. Pretty much had to jump on it, move some things around to make it happen. And got Dustin up there looking at some things with us to try to improve it. This year, we're really not going to do a whole lot just yet, kind of wait.
I haven't even been to the new one yet.
Right. Cool.
Well, before we get too much into that, let's introduce yourselves. You know, we said your names or whatnot, but tell us a little bit about yourselves and, you know, everything.
Yeah, I'm Ryan Greco, and I just have a passion for the outdoors and enjoying it for what it has to offer. And I'm not doing too good here, so
that's all right, dude.
You'll warm up.
No big deal.
Jiminy.
So we got Ryan, Dustin.
Yeah, I'm Dustin Williams from St. Joe, a little farther north of where everybody else is from here, I think. Yeah. I went to school for fisheries and wildlife down at Mizzou, so I was a tiger.
M-I-Z.
M-I-Z. I saw the mugs, or the helmets in there.
Yep.
Yeah, been hunting forever, you know. Started bow hunting when I was 11, and that stuck, so here we are.
It's very addicting.
Yeah. I actually started a business of my own. It's in the baby steps. You know, it's called Habitat Works, and I go and do management plans and consulting and actual contracting for people to do TSI or burning or whatever they might need done. So
that's awesome.
That's neat.
Yeah. And then Tristan?
I'm Tristan Williams. I've just been hunting and fishing since I was, since I can remember. I'm a videographer, photographer. I have a passion for shooting stuff outdoors. Anything outdoor related, I like to take pictures of it or shoot video of it. So that's kind of how I tie into Midwest. But yeah, it's a great time. We got a lot of things going right now, and excited to move forward with Midwest and see where it takes us.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Midwest Wildlife, what you guys do?
Yeah. So I'll just go ahead and start that back over. Ryan Greco. So anyways, got a little off track there, but yeah, Midwest Wildlife, it's just an outlet for us to, you know, pursue the outdoors and share, you know, our experiences and the knowledge and, you know, troubleshooting that you come across out there, bounce ideas back and forth with guys that we like to hunt with and hang out with and, you know, see their success and their kids and families, all that good stuff. We put that coyote tournament on last year.
Yeah, that showed. Yeah, that's where we came to know you guys. I mean, what was that other tournament we were in?
I don't remember. The natural,
and then we found out about you guys, and I mean, y'all are, you know, 10 minutes from my house, pretty much. So we found out about you guys, and we've been following your stuff ever since, and watching. I mean, y'all put out some really good, cool, awesome content. Yeah. So,
well, and not to interrupt, Ryan, go ahead. I'll let you get back to that, but I will say, that was a great tournament.
It was first class.
Whoever made the chili. Man, that was good.
A lot of the girls teamed up on that. Yeah. The Hemi household, I mean, they opened up the doors to us out there. Couldn't have worked out more perfect. But going back to Natural Born Killers, and what I was going to say was that night kind of showed exactly what all-in-one, what we're about, you know, bringing people together for a good time. Nothing other than that, really, is what happened.
Yeah, and, I mean, you had a really big turnout.
One, I mean, geez, we really lost count on how many people came and went that night, but
it was cool. I mean, you had like 70 surprises.
Teams? Was it 70 something participants or 70 teams? I can't remember. It was up there. I think it might have been, it was 72 per teams, which, you know, 2 to 4 man teams, so there's like somewhere around 150 people at least that participated in the hunt itself, and then people came to the prize draft raffle, all that good stuff.
It was fun.
Yeah, I was upset. I wasn't able to make it to that tournament. I don't even remember what I was doing.
And that was actually the first tournament.
We'll be there this
money.
Year.
Yeah.
We'll be
there this year. We won money at that tournament. So.
We got the smallest dog.
we did. That hunt.
The only freaking coyote we shot that day.
You beat me on that. I shot one that was small, and I was in the rounds for a while. I think I lost it by 2. So.
Well, we had to split it with another guy that he actually
tied with.
Yeah, we tied up.
I think he was a placer, too. I believe.
Oh, overall.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
A couple of those guys doubled up on some money. I know that. But it was fun.
It all goes back to it's not.
Yeah, it was fun.
It's not about, you know, winning.
Right.
I mean,
no.
It was cool. No, but yeah, it was about having that fun.
I mean, we
get to meet people, do what we're doing now.
Oh, yeah, and talk about it. I mean, we had that day. It was really, compared to some of the other ones, as far as weather, you would have thought it would have been the perfect day to go out and hunt.
Oh, yeah.
We go out there, and we were thinking we were going to kill so many dogs.
So calm.
We had one double come in that we didn't get. Yeah, we didn't work out. And then one pretty much right at last light before we had to book it in. So, you know, that's just what it is.
Yeah, there's some guys who knew where they were at and waited for it, too. You know, they knew where dogs were and waited for the tournament to go after them. Everybody had a different strategy. All in all, it was like my strategy was to have a good time and
exactly. Everybody. I mean, that's why we
can do it again.
That's I mean, Nate remembers the chili out of all of this.
Some people.
And
was
I remember some cookies.
It wasn't about the cookies.
Yeah.
Another gal made the. I mean, it was a huge team effort. There was a couple dozen people involved that really helped see it all go through. You know, and I made the point that, couldn't have done it without, one guy, whether mm-hmm. he only got one or two prizes for it, or this guy did the chili, or that one did the cookies. It all just, worked out to be completely perfect. So it was great.
No, it was first class, and I know it probably takes a lot of work, but I hope you do it again next year.
Yeah, we're going to. I mean, that's why we put first annual on there and make us have to live by it, and people are asking all that good stuff. So, and then the Natural Born Killer guys, they actually, gave us some tips and some ideas and helped us out in some different ways too. So again, just people working together for, the overall sport.
Yeah.
It's cool to see. Mm-hmm. But going from there, that was why we wanted to do it out here, because like you said, that was the closest one out here on the east side or mm-hmm. west side of Missouri, really. So it was just fitting. A lot of people really wanted to do it. It's close to an area where a lot of people hunt. But.
Yeah. So one thing you should know about our show, we get way off on rabbit holes. We go into rabbit holes a lot.
That was kind of it for me.
So this is awesome. This is what the show is. So I'm going to try to bring it back in and let you continue explaining what Midwest Wildlife is before we interrupt it.
It is kind of just that. I mean, we revolve around the tournament right now. That's part of our identity. Lifestyle brand. We have the hats and shirts and quality focused. And then, again, you already talked a little bit about the content. Tristan and I have been working on the content together for, this was our third turkey season.
Mm-hmm.
So the third turkey season that we've actually done some downright focused on the goal. And we've come so far. I mean, if I showed you guys the stuff that we filmed the first year together out there, you guys would laugh and wouldn't even believe it. But,
I would not laugh.
I filmed three or four myself right now, and I've self-filmed a deer hunt and two turkey hunts. No, I believe it. It's
Tristan would laugh at us.
Yeah, he would. Yeah. Yeah. This guy.
Yeah,
that's why he knows where he came from.
Tristan knows where he came from. It didn't. He didn't just pick it up and know it. I mean, he worked. Mm-hmm. He's worked relentlessly at figuring out all these different little things to, put these masterpieces together. And fortunately, we've been able to work together really well at it. So that's kind of where it lies. And then we really have been just a business. It'll be 1 year this. Third quarter of 2020 will be 1 year as a legitimate business. So
awesome.
We're trying to grow. COVID didn't help. We had a deal going with some hopeful opportunities that kind of came crashing down because of that, put some things on hold, but we're still getting after it. And then, so that kind of leads to Dustin and I's relationship. He went to Mizzou, wrestled there with my brother down there, new guys through each other and whatnot. And I had an Ozark farm, and we got together on it, just this
February, I think.
Yeah, February.
That just happened to be a half a mile from my fiance's brother's house. And so I took his Ranger over, and we did some work that day. And
flipped it.
flipped it. Gave an antelope.
The property, not the Ranger.
Almost, though. That place is like a mountain. You're
good.
Down there.
Yeah, if you ain't good.
So
sorry, I just wanted to make sure no one knew we flipped that Ranger.
That would have been more fun.
I'm sure it's been flipped.
Yeah, we flipped the property. Well, we were down there, and we just I've always kind of, I guess, been a guy who kind of wings it out here deer hunting, figured it out by trial and error, all that good stuff. I've been bow hunting since I was 12, so 7th grade. I was like, I need to be out there more. All we were doing was hunting one time a year. Back then, it was kind of that's what you did. Your dad took you out for rifle season. You're lucky enough to get to go those 2-3 days, whatever. And I was just driven to go more and more. So bow hunted, figured a lot of it out on my own, which that's how I like to do things anyways. But I'm fascinated in the science of it all and just kind of checking in on what I've known and have learned and come to know. And so that's where I like to get into this stuff with Dustin of, different ideas or kind of out of the box stuff.
Breaking it down, you've got
natural, more natural.
What's there,
feel.
What needs to be there, what needs to be taken out.
Right. Basically every, would you say, square acre working for you on the land, not just, here's where I want my 10-acre food plot or there's a nice oak tree, you know. It was, hey, let's zone in on some of this other stuff of how these deer travel.
All-encompassing thermal patterns and just anything that is beneficial to the hunter, you know, just to know.
And again, I think things that you're still halfway aware of, you know, or should be at least if you're trying to harvest mature deer. I mean, and if you're not, that's fine too, you know. But I've been able to, what I live by is leveling up. So I've leveled up, you know, I've killed deer and tried to grow as I kill them, you know. Sometimes you go backwards, sometimes you don't, whatever.
We've talked about this in our show. It's about what's your individual experience.
What are you looking to get? Yeah, right? what's your year look like? There's 100 different variables, you know. It's not just getting to go out and hunt. Some people can't hunt 15 days out of a season, you know. Take what opportunity they can. That's their choice to. But I wanted to get into some of this other stuff, challenge myself a little further, and just gain a little more understanding for future references and stuff. And so, fortunately, Dustin and I got together. It's been great.
Myself, like with Midwest Wildlife, I'm the habitat guy. As a deer hunter, though, and turkey hunter, I'm more like the public hunting guy, or the hunting public guys.
Okay.
Right.
Been crossing rivers and stuff since my dad and I lost permission on our good hunting farm in 2003. And we started at one public hunting spot and conservation area here in Missouri. And every year since then, I've been to that same one plus a bunch of different ones. And I like to go, you know, just across the state and hit one and just see what I get into. And that's kind of my style as a hunter.
Oh yeah.
But my real passion is like managing land.
Yeah.
And my experience in work is managing
land. Well, go ahead, Mike. Sorry, but that probably helps out whenever it gets into that public land. I mean, because you can, I'm assuming you pull up your Onyx or whatever, you know, mapping device you use, and you're like, well, I know in my experience, this is what works, and this is where the deer should be moving and coming from, and bedding and feeding.
Able to understand topography.
All those things.
What it offers.
Really, like, since those guys started getting big, a lot of my knowledge base has expanded a lot because there's been more people kind of getting towards that. The whole thermal patterning thing was a huge game changer that, for me, developed and evolved last year from, like, ultimate baby level to like every time I went hunting, I was either meeting deer head on or sneaking up on them.
You went from the example, you know, I'm sure everybody kind of knows there's guys who really don't believe to hunt the wind, even. I don't know,
right?
If ran crossover or not, whatever.
I was one of them when I first started hunting.
There's a lot of people who just went flat out down. Yeah. Like, it does not matter. You can't, and I'm like, okay, that's fine.
So I'll smoke my cigarette in the deer
stand. Yeah.
You know, if you then they don't do it, you're like, hunt damn the it. Wind. Yeah. I'm not saying that it can't work or won't, but I'm all about increasing the odds, you know.
Yep. Right.
So, what I'm hearing Dustin say is that he's taken, you know, that serious avenue, you know, that some people still are kind of linger on. Which I don't at all. I hunt the wind. And now he's taken that to that level of the thermals, you know. He hunts the thermals and thinks you're crazy if you don't.
You can get busted on a deer that is upwind of you directly, you know. And
like
he smells you. And you're like, you know, like I did everything that I'm supposed to do. But
that scent was carried.
Yeah,
It went with the wind for a little bit, but when that gust died back down, it's going back towards him.
Either a fall or a rise, you know. And I've always known that in the morning and in the night, you know, there's obviously thermal energy shifts. But to dive into it on the level that he's now doing, it's just bringing a whole nother aspect to, you know, like I said, increasing the odds.
Well, not everybody has those same experiences. Right. I mean, we kind of got into thermals, because I'm a big believer in those too. When we started going out west elk hunting,
right?
Because it's all about thermals out there.
Yeah,
dude, I mean, you're either uphill or downhill.
Yeah, it's downhill.
I've been to Colorado four times and haven't even got to apply that yet because it was last year that I learned it.
Yeah. And it's a mind screw because you're like, hey, I think I'm good.
Yep.
Nope, you're not.
Yep,
you know, and it's this damn thermals. That's where
that being out there would really make you a believer of it, I would guess.
Sure. You have to plan your hunt, your day, based off thermal shifts out there. And it's just, if you don't, you're...
It's really weird in like, you know, the middle of the day to just hunker down and just sit for 3 hours.
Yep.
But it's the right decision. Yeah. That is nap time.
Yeah. That's nap time.
And so, yeah, I can definitely...
Get the glasses out.
Oh, where we go.
You can't see from here to the wall.
Yeah, we hunt that dark timber. lot of blowdown, and we don't get too much glass and opportunity, but I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying though.
Yeah, that, if, for those in a particular spot.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, we recently had Aaron Warbritton with the Hunting Public was on.
Yeah.
And one thing I started using last year or the year before.
Milkweed.
Yep. It used to use the puffer deal, right?
Yep.
And then started watching those guys. I'm like, shit, that's cool.
And then you're driving down the highway, and luckily for us, Missouri's Department of Transportation, I think, is starting to get on it where they don't mow everything anymore, and they mow it less, and so now we got a lot of milkweed to pull over and grab.
I remember the first time I used it at one of the spots I hunt, I'm right on a creek, and I can feel the wind hitting me in the cheek the way I want it to. I want it to come across my left cheek, going right. And I drop that milkweed and straight down the opposite way, right down that creek. And you're like, I'm screwed. I mean, and that puffer stuff doesn't show you that because it's gone after 10 feet.
Dissipates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Well, have you guys heard of the smoke bomb in a deer's
head? I've seen the commercials and things like that.
Yeah, they say don't do it during season. You can do it during season, and if you're set up in the right spot, it won't matter. But you light your smoke bomb, and then, like, wind travels like water, not straight line. So every tree, every bush, every animal that walks through your scent moves around and goes up and down, and it ends up in places that you would not even imagine. So there's a lot of times that if you're set up wrong, deer are getting you, like, way before you even know they're in the area.
Don't even know they ever were even gonna,
I mean, same as the wind, same as if you blatantly sit in a bad wind. It's just another notch, you know.
Yeah,
they have their checking points.
And
they, you might fool, especially bow hunting. It's just,
and they work together.
I like
too.
A 20-yard shot, so I want to do everything I can to get that deer within, you know, 23 to 18 yards. You know, I like the close encounter. I'm not really, I don't really want to shoot them at 35, 40 yards with my bow.
Yeah,
and so I mean, you just see it all, and so it brings it back to kind of what Dustin was saying. You know, all of us have that public bone in us. Tristan's chased on it. I mean, all of us sitting here. We'll go hard at it. We don't have the luxury like some people do, or we have at other times that we may not now. Fortunately, this farm we're talking about here in particular, family owns 160, in-laws that me and my brother-in-law hunt, but I did buy the 80 next to it. And so it gives us the opportunity to do a little bit of both, but we'll chase these deer anywhere we have to, you know, too, and breaking it down. But this gives us an ability to really break these down to hunt the best for us that they can when we have the right opportunity to hunt them, so that we don't have to, you know, run around on all these other public grounds here and there. During deer season, that can become pretty defeating at times. And I know Tristan could talk a lot about that. I've had some sob stories out there.
Public ground is fun. It is.
I love it for turkey hunting especially, but deer hunting, it's a whole...
It's hard, man. It's really, really hard.
But at the same time, you know, was it you and me?
You can get in there.
We were just talking about this last week about, man, sometimes it would be nice to go hunt public ground and just be like, I'm hunting and this is what I'm doing. How much time do we spend every summer, which is the topic we're going to talk about, is summer projects, on our properties... With food plots, work, and whatever, you spend just hours upon hours for the chance of that, you know, that one deer you might be after or whatever. Sometimes there's something to be said for just going hunting.
Well, that's what it is. Yeah, you're going hunting in the nomadic experience. You know, Tristan's dad, he's a real nomad hunter. He'll be gone. I think a lot of times that's why we do that, or he does that, or, you know,
that's
myself,
I do it
too. It's like, you're out there, and it's a challenge. Just like hunting a new property, if someone invites you and says, hey, you can come hunt my property or whatever with us this weekend, and I show up, and I'll just bring a hang-on or a climbing stand or whatever just to kind of, you know, go look and see what maybe you think might be, because it's your choice. You know, not everybody gets that freedom either, but that's what it's about. I agree.
There's no better place to learn, Jason, like, deer behavior, though, more than public ground, you know, that – Missouri has such, like, vast and amazing properties that everybody can hunt. You don't have to own property. But it's the best place to just go watch. I mean, you're not after a specific deer that you've been letting grow for 3 years, like, on your property. You know, all the management. You're just – you don't know what's there. But you get to study the land more to figure out where you think the biggest deer will be.
Yeah.
And learn it that way. Oh, so it's just a whole different avenue of learning.
How the doe travel, and then you're in there during the rut. And It will teach you a lot.
You just have to have. You have to have that mindset that today might be ruined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might.
Yeah.
You know, and I think watching the shows like The Hunting Public and guys like Born and Raised, we watch with elk hunting and stuff. Mm-hmm. You just got to go into it knowing everybody owns this public ground just like me.
Yep.
And I might be on a perfect setup, I think, and I might have a guy walk through it 10 minutes before dark.
Oh, yeah.
It is what it is.
They talk about, too, like, I was real bad forever about getting really defeated when I ran into another human out there.
Right.
And I'm just like
that's a good thing.
Damn it. You know, yeah. Like,
right.
Talk to each other. Like,
see what
a lot
saw.
Of them guys are still that way, but a lot of them really aren't. Mm-hmm. And they're just like us. And they're out there having fun. It's kind of bummy to them that they ran into you just like it was. But if you can go find your own nook and they can go, you know, you can figure it out.
Aaron said this in our episode with him. He said when he would first run into people, he would get pissed off and like, yeah, this is my spot.
Or like go hide and try not to let them see you or whatever.
And he learned that's a great thing.
Yeah.
Because now I know there's people here. The deer aren't going to be there.
Right.
I'm going to find somewhere else.
Through there. Yeah, right. You use it to your advantage.
You have to. Yeah. And obviously,
and overcome every time. If you're going to hunt, you can be hunting. We can be hunting this 160, and there could have been people walking around the whole border of it earlier that day or any time. You don't know. So,
So summer projects.
Yeah.
So I think that's cool. A cool subject is to talk about what are some cool summer projects. Summer land management things that
we should be doing right
now. There's a lot of people. I mean, we're
getting a little late now, but
sure. I mean,
if we were 4 or 5, 6 weeks ago, we can still touch on some of that stuff too.
Yeah.
But
we're definitely going to be releasing this in August, and that just is what it is. But
informational.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that either have access or own land that they're kind of like a lot of us. Even maybe before you started learning a lot about it, Dustin, is what in the hell do I do?
What do I do with it?
Right.
Check trail cameras.
Yeah. Right. Throw that bag of corn down every once in a while.
That preseason attract.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the deer cane.
Get the deer cane. That mineral lick. Get that established. That's all I need.
That's legit, though. Man. I mean, mineral is something you can do anytime.
Yeah.
Mineral. We want to always do mineral.
Yeah.
I mean, all year round, it's always an easy thing to do during the summers.
So I know people aren't going to be doing this yet, but beginning of the summer, what are some things that you start thinking about? Hey, okay, here's some thoughts. Here's what I'm going to start planning for. And then as you go through your summer, what do you start transitioning into? You know, so when do you really start messing with your stuff, preparing for the year coming up?
I mean,
all the time.
Yeah. Shooting. Yeah, I mean, you're shooting all the time, staying comfortable there. I don't think anybody has a problem doing that. As far as land management goes, though, you want to think that during the summer months, you're trying to be relatively uninvasive. So early on, you want to have your access ready to go. Get in there, slip in there.
Get that access ready to go. Yeah. Basically,
got a dog walking through.
Basically, the access as soon as. I don't know, 6 weeks into major growth season? And then from there, groom it.
Yeah, keep it monitoring, manicured. A lot of monitoring. So if you do have some established food plots or ones that you're just like trying to get going, a lot of times you're going to be battling a lot of weeds and you're going to be battling, you know, not like a failed food plot. So what do you do then? You know, time it for the rain, try to get an overseed in. You know, it's a monitoring process on a property like this. A lot of mowing. Invasive species are probably the biggest issue that I face on a daily basis. And summertime is good for invasive species for a couple of reasons. Because when you spray in the summer, that plant is going under more stress from the high heat and just dryness. And then there's also growing season burning.
Less chance of the seed spores re-germinating.
Plants, I don't know, you guys watch Dr. Woods? Growing deer TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Extremely informational.
Oh, yeah.
Way above my pay grade. but plants in the summertime, especially the late summertime, all their energy's up here. So if you kill them down here, they don't have anything left.
Right.
So that's a good summer thing, too, post June 15th.
Getting ready to those.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lot of monitoring. Summer is kind of limited.
Mm-hmm. It is, and I mean this farm in particular. So the 160, it's we're kind of at. We can do whatever we want hunting wise. You know, it's you know your deal. Do what you need to with it. Help out. It's the grandfather, my grandpa in law is what it would be. It's his place, and so he'll it's CRP. What probably. At least three quarters almost of it,
yeah.
So to speak. I'd say 100 acres is almost CRP, and then the other 60 is ditches and draws. But we have established mineral sites, so always go through, freshen those up, whether we have cameras in front of them or not. That's always the thing, keeping those good for your doe population and then, you know, overall antler growth. Like Dustin said, that the food plots, if there's a failed one, spraying it off. Otherwise, you know, helping manicure the weeds out of it, fertilizing them. Making sure that they do have water sites, you know, like we got a couple little dried up ponds is what I call them, but the creeks still feed them. Mm-hmm. All of them go through and just kind of pull logs and stuff out to continue to feed them as best as they can so that whatever water we can get in there, we keep. And then
you know, little,
your border trails.
Yeah, border trail maintenance. A little to go along with the mineral thing and the food plot thing, like your plot rock.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
the broadcasting mineral. Mm-hmm. Say you got a patch of just tall grass or something, and it's in the perfect V, and you want to start a food plot there, and it's July 1. You go in, you knock down the tall grass, you terminate it, most likely with chemical. I try to do it without if I can't, but that's a lot tougher to do.
Difficult. Right? Yeah.
You get your seed down, and you spread that plot rock. Or Redmond, you can just get like you can get stuff just like it at TSC. Yeah. That's you know it's widely available.
I call it the mineral plot.
Yeah, and then any plant that grows in that area has that mineral in it. So the deer critters aren't having to go through the soil to eat. Get that mineral.
They don't got to eat dirt to do it.
Yeah, when you think about a deer, what's the biggest cause for aging is their teeth.
Right,
you wear the teeth down.
Yep,
and then. He's probably going to have some health issues because he's been eating dirt mineral, you right. know, for whatever. Yeah. Is my thinking, too long. At least.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. I'm not a scientist.
If you can give it to him easier, you might as well.
Right.
You know, and not only that, you know what's it's funny, not though, concentrated is, either.
You know? I don't know what you all do, but when I personally, on my mineral sites, I know Andy does this. We mix our own. We think we're mm-hmm. scientists. I don't know.
Big 55-gallon.
Yeah. A little bit.
You know, we buy salt and trace mineral and dical and I'll have a pile of it right here, and I'll get on camera a damn deer 5 feet away from it where it washes, digging in the damn dirt
mm-hmm.
when he's got a pile of it.
See, it could be too hard. It could
I've
be
never
hardened,
even thought you know? About that.
And I'm just like, what? I mean, it doesn't bother me.
I spread mine
there,
out
but...
in a general area. Always have, I mean, probably 2-3 times the size of this table here, which was tapped on it, just because I don't like it all concentrated in one area anyway. Yeah. And then they pack it down so much. That it turns into like an area that holds water pretty much too. So right. it's like a
little bit of a pond area.
Mineral pond. Yeah. yeah. I mean, I have one that's the size of this room.
Yeah.
And he shot a doe. Tristan did over it last year. And it's like a mineral watering hole pretty much.
Right.
But
that's a good idea. I didn't think of that. I mean,
spreading it out.
Drop it and it's, you know, this pyramid deal. And
I've mm-hmm. seen it to where it will harden up pretty darn thick. So, I ran mineral for like 10 years. It's always just kind of been my thing, just keeping mineral in there.
I've always ran it, but I've always just went and like bought a damn trophy rock. Mm. And nothing against trophy
rock.
I mean,
no, I would just buy the trophy rock ground
well,
down.
Well, you pay for it, and then you look at it.
It's not
and you look at the back, and the ingredients is like 99.7% just straight salt.
I just get
which is fine.
I get that same mineral rock just ground up.
Yeah.
And that will harden up.
Mm-hmm. Like that.
Like that. Yeah. You know, so his suggestion spreading it out, I mean... You can spread it out over the top of your food plot, and it's still going to give a mineral right through the clover.
I've done, trees will be multiple stem, one dies, and you've got this nook that holds water and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Throw some mineral in it.
Yep. Yeah.
You want water very, very close to your mineral sites.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure some of you are aware of that. Some people aren't, but you want it within a stone's throw pretty much of your
mineral I've got site. A problem in one of my spots. Dustin, I want to hear your thoughts on this. So one of my spots, I've got a problem. My mineral site... stays wet, just like you were saying, Ryan,
mm-hmm.
but really wet. So if we get one good rain,
washes it out.
And so, well, I mean, maybe that's not a bad thing. My mineral site has turned into a pretty large site because it'll wash.
Yeah.
And go it's killing everything, you know, down of it.
Yeah.
And now the site's probably 20 foot long by 10 foot wide.
I would assume that a lot of that, other than the...
It's got good sunlight in there. You could probably put...
Not really.
I would assume that other than the direct high flow part of that, a lot of that soil around is still pretty rich, I would imagine. I've not seen it where it washes and then you've got... like an elongated, I've seen the big washout, like hole craters, but
this like sounds well, like this a is trough. Kind
of
a
this is kind of a weird setup because it was my bad, right? So the first year we started doing mineral, I know we're going off on a tangent, but
well, that's mineral what we do. Mineral's a big deal though.
The first year we did it, I had this smart idea for the first couple of months of the summer to put soybean meal in with it, and I'm like, oh, they'll love that. Mm. Well, soybean meal gets wet. What's it do?
Rots.
And so the original site I had, I went to check it one day, and it was, I mean, it was a dead animal smell.
Just rank.
So I had to shovel it out of there. All the, and so that was the original site. Then I moved the site uphill, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, one large spot because I had to kind of, I remember walking in there going, something's dead in here.
The crazy
and then
thing
I look,
is,
I'm
though,
like, oh, it's that.
After he moved it, they started using the old site.
Yeah.
Like, once he shoveled it out of there, we had, on camera, they were going back to the old rotten spot and not the new spot.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, but now it's just kind of all one big, you know, mineral site. But, you know, I'll go dump a five-gallon bucket of that, and the first rain, gone.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't harden up like I kind of want it to here and there.
Yeah, I'd probably move it to where it doesn't get ran off.
Build a rim or something.
Believe it or not, this was years ago, too, where I would put the big old...
Just say it, Andy. Just say it. Say you're right.
He said build a brim. I believe I did that.
You did do that.
Yeah, yelled at me. Well, I mean, I did something, too. So, in St. Joe, up there where I live, we're fortunate to have some urban agricultural ground to hunt. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that city deer get big.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The original landowner, when we started, passed away, and then we had to fight like hell to continue hunting it. We got that. But the new farmer has tactics of, like, removing all the trees and the waterways and planting every square inch, right, which for us is not what you want.
Right.
They used to have grass. They had a whole big patch of timber that he took out, and so there's a lot of erosion and things like that. And so in my mind, I'm like, well, what do I do to try to, you know, make lemonade out of
these lemons.
Bad lemons, you know? Some of those washout spots, why not? He can't get into that, so use those little nooks to just get something growing. If you know water flows through there, I purposely did kind of what you were struggling with, and I would put a bunch of mineral at the head cut of a erosion ditch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small one. If it was a huge one, let it kind of carry it across that field, because it was about a 200-yard stretch. And I figured it probably wasn't going to make it down there right away. Mm-hmm. It would at least kind of rich that area up. And there was quite a bit of deer traffic that, they're going to travel that anyways because it's a corridor, but I think it helped.
For me, the land management side of what I do is, I don't know, what can you do to make your spot a little more appealing to the deer than the one half a mile away?
Mm-hmm.
Are you helping or not? Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to try some different things.
Right.
And, a lot of people are big on food plots.
Yeah, I think you can do nothing and just learn how to hunt it all and your access correctly. I mean, the food plot stuff and mineral sites, all that's great, you know, but...
Or just manage your property. Yeah. I mean, you said this one that we're looking at, 160 and plus the 80 or something?
Yeah, and the 80's next. I mean, we'll break into hunting, a little bit of it this year. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves on it because, we want to take advantage. We know a lot of bucks are coming in out there onto our property. I mean, I typically hunt the west side anyways that ties into it. That's kind of my sweet spot over there. But we'll get into that.
if we didn't have a food plot on here, and even when the ones we do, I don't particularly hunt on over them or on them. Same with the mineral sites, because to me, it's just overall herd health and population. So anytime you can get out there and kind of help the does that are, you know, trying to raise up fawns or make your bucks have bigger antlers, the easiest thing, most beneficial thing you can do. And then if you want to choose to hunt over it, you know, make your spot more appealing, great, more power to you. But is the mineral, and then it's water from there for me. And then second is really just making sure that I have all my access points in, manicured, you know, and whether that CRP's tall grass that year or was cut off that year isn't really going to make any difference to me other than still having to have my access points into the little timber pockets that I choose to hunt.
A lot of landowners might be okay with Dustin, you might know these guys. They're on our network, Land and Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love to talk to them sometime. They're real nice guys. They're big on, at least from what I'm listening to them, it sounds like this. You might have a 200-acre farm. You don't have a single mineral site or a single food plot. But if you manage the property correctly, mm-hmm. do maybe some hinge cutting, mm-hmm. provide cover for the animals.
Yep.
You just brought them to you without actually changing anything, and you're improving your property by removing some canopy and you know some stuff like that.
So that's my goal. Strongest area is the timber work. TSI is incredible. Like for carrying capacity is what you're changing. You can literally hold a lot more deer
and feed them longer
in areas that have had TSI work done. They're going to get tender browse coming up because the sunlight that comes down that's not being blocked by the closed canopy.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of cover because a deer lives at 5 foot and below. Right. We often, me not last year, but most of the time we're thinking we're up in a tree and, you know, you want this cover and stuff. But to them, unless they're seasoned to tree stand hunters, which they may or may not be, this is where mm-hmm. this is where they're at.
Yeah,
they're and so if they feel concealed 6 foot lower, you know, just a dynamic as you go through there. That's the best thing that you can do.
And it's probably the cheapest thing you can do too. I mean, the only thing
you do it yourself.
If you do it yourself, you can get you get a buddy and a case of beer. You go out there with a chainsaw. Maybe wait till after you're done working.
Yeah.
But
whacking trees down.
You can get a lot of work done.
Yeah.
And I mean,
do a little research, but
definitely do. Can. Don't just
Missouri Woods and Water guy said just to cut down our entire place.
Get some beer and go get a chainsaw and start cutting stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time.
Get rid of all the timber.
Honestly,
I'm with them though. I follow
that carrying capacity thing is like. I've seen it because I've had the opportunity to go back to some projects and, you know, see how it improves year to year. And it's a huge mess, which turns a lot of people off. But, you know, what's a big buck like? A huge mess.
Yeah.
So why not create a huge mess in, like, any patch of timber that you have? And it becomes better.
Well, and it's looking for the long-term goal,
mm-hmm.
the time you're working on it. Once again, I was listening to another,
see more deer.
Another podcast on our network, the Bear Hunter magazine podcast. He had Land and Legacy on, and they were doing some more talking, and they started talking about Japanese honeysuckle.
Yep, bush honeysuckle.
There's a lot of people that think it's great because the deer eat the berries, blah, blah, blah.
It's invasive.
But that's an invasive species, and it's short-term payout
for detrimental
things. Right. But you try telling somebody maybe that I'm hunting over these honeysuckles, and these deer are coming right to it, and I'm killing them. You're an idiot. Like, no, I'm not doing that. And it's...
Right.
You know, they talk about having to reprogram people in the way you think, and it's about long-term goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, for instance, TSI.
Yeah.
There's potentially a lot of people listening to this show that don't know what does that mean.
Yeah.
What does TSI entail?
Timber stand improvement.
There you go. And what are some things that, let's say you just bought this property here. What, Dustin, would be the first thing you would do? Just you bought it, you might have walked through it obviously, but first thing you're going to do, let's say you bought it in May.
Well, so this farm, for example, Ryan told me that they recently logged all the mature walnuts out of it, so they lost a lot of roost trees
years ago,
and stuff.
We did.
Walnuts don't provide a whole lot of benefit to whitetail, but for the turkeys, roost trees,
it hurt.
It
helped with the timber for the deer, but
so knowing that, go in there. I saw some of those stumps that they had cut, and they've got 10 or 15 sprouts on them. Mm-hmm. So for the walnuts only, you're going in and you're picking, at this point, you know, 3, 4, 5 of them. A couple years, you're narrowing it down to one that's doing the best. Mm-hmm. And then
in that area where the old one was taken from.
At that point, you just use a hierarchy of what trees you do and don't want. And, you know, for me, it's oaks, hickories, walnuts, because of their log value, really, because it's nice to have options to get that farm payment.
Right.
Future. And then your softer woods like elms, a little bit softer, you know, elms, hackberries, just stuff that does well. And then you got your locusts and your hedge, and it's all every piece of land's different. So there's no cookie cutter method.
You have to go through and take the time to identify and understand and mark, and then take out what you don't want, and then work on it year in and year out. This farm, so I guess to kind of wrap our heads back into, I guess, the summer plan or whatever tactics.
Don't do TSI in the summer.
Don't do that in the summer. Let's just go and say that this farm was exactly in line, exactly how we wanted it. And it really would just be a manicuring process.
Like you bought it in May and it's like just perfect.
Everything, yes. Our trails are established, our, you know, wind direction trails, everything's just in shape, perfectly established. It's just a manicure standpoint, generally speaking, in the summer, you know, trail cams, maybe freshening up minerals, like we said, food plots, kind of going through nitpicking things. Now, if you wanted to add a project in on a year, you know, that your farm's already manicured, this farm in particularly speaking would be a good candidate to put a couple wildlife ponds in. And so you just come in and you find a hillside that has a good slope or grade to it, that you notice some drainage run towards a creek or something in that direction. And if you can find a clay area, it's even better. And then we come through and we'll dig that out. We'll make about a 10-yard by 5, 6, 7, 8-yard pond that then stays full all year because it's on that backside of a hill. And I mean, it's like a food plot, you know, but for water.
They got to have there.
It's another thing that they're going to go to. And I picked that tactic up years ago, hunting down in Gasconade County. I got to hunt on a guy's farm. I think he had six to 800 acres down there, and he'd have all these slow rolling hilltops, and every one of them, you know, he had these wildlife ponds, and every night you'd just see deer, you know, it didn't matter when. They just come crawling right up and get that easy access water. Saw a lot of bucks over them or in those areas. But I mean, to me, I like hunting doe because if I know that I understand and learn my doe population, and that's something you can also do in the summer too, checking in on your does, you know, from afar to see how they're doing. You know, there's, to me, if I know they're consolidating in certain areas, then I'm going to be able to understand how the bucks are going to most likely be traveling, come later on that.
They know where the does are.
You know, and that's the biggest thing with this farm is it holds anywhere from 8 to 12 doe between the two sides. That's on the 160. And so, sure enough, you'll always have some bucks running around in there if you take care of those doe. It's not really a buck domain. Now, the 80 acres that we just bought, that's what I'm going to consider like a big buck factory. Mm-hmm. They're coming in and out of there. It's a big chunk of timber next to it. And, I mean, we're going to go hog wire on
seed or thinning. I mean,
all sorts of everything we're talking about is going to go down on that 80 acres. We're going to walk every square inch.
He is the owner. We can do whatever you actually control it.
100% on it, you know, and I don't stretch the boundaries on the other side. I do what needs to be done to keep them happy, which keeps me happy, and it's a good working relationship. Super thankful for it too, but I can't go in and dig a wildlife pond in there. You know what I mean? Right. I can't say I'm leaving this
section of CRP
this year. I need that done by this time. You know, we'd be burning all this stuff off if it was, you know, our particular choice. But summer's really kind of kick back, relax, get amped up for the season, and just keep your method and approach in check, you know.
Yeah.
Go back through, do some clip-in trimming on your main trails. You know, this one in particular, we got this south side trail for our north wind that would come through the center. That's got to be kind of gone through. This stuff that really at this point should be done. If it's not, go get it done as fast as you can. I don't really get out and hunt on these properties till late October anyway. So to me, it's not overly pressing. I mean, it's coming down to the wire. But
right. You know, it's funny. I always say, I got time. It's not overly pressing. And then next thing I know, I'm like, oh, shit.
It is. It'll be overly pressing about next weekend if we don't get it done. No kidding. I mean, I've got plans to get up there on the 15th and pretty much knock out the remaining odds and ends and maybe one other weekend from there.
And these that 160 and that 80 that are literally right next to each other are a perfect example of not being cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
Because on his
nothing
80,
but cedars.
Cedars, hardly. A lot of hedge probably, and honey locust up in them old former pasture areas. But over here, you've got some established, like, mature timber. Obviously, hardwoods. It has that junk in there too, but nice grass.
For the most part, it's established hardwood timber. And that 80 there has every bit of it all. You know, it's got the thick briars that you can't even walk through. It's got mature timber through the center, and then it's got the sparse.
Mm-hmm. Early successional post cattle operation looking stuff is what that is in there.
You know, the water is something I never really thought about.
Oh, it's huge. That's because like my favorite thing.
Everywhere I've ever hunted, there's been water around. Right. I mean, heck, I just told you I hunt right on a creek.
Right. You know, and I'm like, there's theories that they don't like to drink out of moving water. Huh. And they'll drink out of a creek, you know, where it puddles up or pools up or stops. But they do. They want to, I think, a calm setting when they go to get a drink. They want to be able to hear.
Yeah.
They want to be able to.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Everything still.
And moving water is turbid, so you've got suspended soil.
I've only seen one deer ever drink out of a creek, and that was that one right there, right before he died.
I've seen,
he shouldn't have been drinking out of
the creek. He took a drink and then stepped out.
So I'm not saying that they won't, but general rule of thumb, I just known to see them. I mean, they'll drink out of like just a puddle of water there because that's the easy.
That makes sense. They're
a safe bet for them, you know. And if they have this established area that's their water site, it's pretty much lights out, in my opinion. It's one of my number one things.
It's an easy scouting tool too because you get the no bucks are really hitting that one. I can see what footprints are in there, so
maybe
the bucks over on a different one too.
All sorts of benefits to it. The scouting tool as well.
So good spot for cameras.
You just mentioned
camera spot.
Different types of timber in that 80 you bought.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. You know, at one of the places I'm at, and you know, Mike has got some new places he got access to this year. I've got an interest. It's not a very large property, but it's the timber itself is basically cut in half right down the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
By a creek. The north side of that timber is mostly hardwoods, your normal oaks, stuff like that, but it's pretty thick canopy. There's not a lot of sunlight getting in. Mm-hmm. And in the back half, which scares me, is a bunch of thick, thorny locusts. Nothing you can hang in.
About this place? You been there?
And
you didn't see any stands when you walk around that area.
People keep talking about you need to mess with that, but
we might be neighbors.
Those mature deer live there.
Yeah,
I mean because it's thick. Nothing wants to go in there, you know. And
they slip in, slip out.
Yeah, and I'm reluctant to mess
with
it.
No competition.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
because
I know a guy.
I know it's bedding area. And
he's getting his cards out.
Yeah. That's the thing that people have to kind of think is this going to is it going
to
screw it up, or is what's going on now going to last?
Right.
Because eventually
they're going to keep using that, or is it going to overgrow it? And
so bad,
And that's it's funny you said it because that's exactly what's going on here. And a lot of the drawings I have on here are to try to wrangle that back in, but still have some of that uniqueness to it that does offer, certain hide or cover to them. There's a real back and forth there. I hunted an area that was real similar, and I hunted it for 6-7 years in a row, and you could kind of watch it grow up, and it was real awesome for like 3 or 4 years because it was just the perfect setting. But then it went from not being tall enough to perfect to too tall, too overgrown,
and
then
gone.
You can't see, nothing can really go through there.
I've had the same thing on that piece of public that I was talking about that I've been in for 15 years.
And I might have been lying on 7 years. It could have been longer, 10, whatever.
Right.
It's been a long time ago, but I did watch it
changes.
Go through that phase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it makes you double, almost second guess yourself. That the same property I'm talking about, which is not yours, I promise.
Right.
I'm not on that.
we'll find you.
it's a 3 years ago, I was walking through there after a snow, after season was over, just trying to look for some sheds.
Best time to walk.
And it has some, I call them curtain vines.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just looks like a wall of, I don't even know what it's actually called.
Probably some English ivy or Virginia creeper.
It was still green for the most part. So anyway, I'm walking through there, and I get within, you know, me to Tristan, which is maybe 5 feet from that ivy, whatever the hell it was, mm-hmm. and I bump a, buck, and it's this buck I've been after. If anybody listens, it's Sub-Zero who I bumped, and there he goes, and he was just there, and I don't know how I got within 5 feet of the damn thing, because I was crunching through the snow, and didn't even know he was there, and there he goes, and I got to watch him, and it makes you go, oh, this is perfect, I need to leave this stuff alone, blah, 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 and at some point, that's going to be a problem.
Definitely.
Because it's going to get worse and worse. And
they'll get entangled in it.
Well, that, and then you're just blocking, so a lot of those invasives, they just outcompete.
They outcompete
everything. They send chemicals out that inhibit other plants' growth. And, you know, a lot of these problems that we have, like with the oaks that die, isn't because there's just something getting them, but their conditions aren't what they need to be for the for the trees to remain healthy. And so you gotta manage things that aren't supposed to be there, even though they seem beneficial. Honeysuckle's the same way, because the way it grows. When it gets big, it umbrellas out, and then it creates this, like, shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And they love to bed up against it, like, if they can see out a little bit or whatever. But before long, you can't move. Like, a big buck, you think about how wide, like, 2 feet wide antlers they got.
Right.
What it's like walking through some of that stuff. Like, they don't want to put extra effort in.
To get through.
Yeah. They want to be safe and have a good, secure place, but if they can't move through it and
they got to find a new route. Yeah. They got to be efficient, too, in their methods. Yeah. I mean, throughout the season.
And that's one thing.
Always changing.
One thing I've done here, and you say, I guess I've been doing it, but not maybe intentional. It's for my own benefit. One of the properties I was on, I was taking a tractor and mower, and every couple years I'd mow some trails back open and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then problem was, there's so much thorny locust, I was losing tires so often. So finally, I've got a skid steer on tracks and a mower for that skid steer. So my plan is, you know, to kind of keep those trails maybe not completely groomed, but keep that undergrowth
controlled. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Right. And that's the biggest thing. I've said it is, it's you get your place how you want it, and then you manicure it in the summer. The summer is the manicure months of, you know, you should, if you were doing a spring food plot, you should already done it. If you're not, then, you know, right about now, you should be start thinking about
your fall
spraying
stuff,
and your fall stuff. So in between those two times, you're literally manicuring, or you're tackling a piece of your farm plan, you know, sporadically throughout. I use this analogy in the business that I'm in, because it's very similar. It's, you know, smaller scale as far as homeowners and their lawns and things like that versus farms, and it's a year in and year out process every season to get your place, you know, all four seasons of the year in and year out, to get it to how you want it, and then to keep it to how you want it. And
and you freaking,
it's just all there
take
is.
One damn year off and you're full of clover again.
Yeah, you will. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'll go backwards really quick. So staying on top of it is key, and just finding those times to do it is the biggest thing.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that goes into it. And you, like, just on that farm, for example, you know, talking about the manicuring, you know, maintaining your entry and accesses, spraying trails in the summer has always been a good time just to prepare yourself for a quiet entry when it's the peak of November. You know, you're not having to worry about foliage and being loud walking in.
You know, a big storm comes through and you know that it knocked a bunch of limbs down in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You better go check your entrance and stuff, because
Make it easy on yourself, because you're going to have to bring your chainsaw, because you're going to have to do something, you know. But you already know where you're going, what you're going to do. You're just checking in, manicuring things, and being prepared.
I mean, 75% of the battle of being invisible during peak of the rut is in your access point. So I think that's another great thing to check. I know also,
if we could,
you know,
snap our fingers and be in our stands, we'd all kill a lot more deer.
I've got a great invention idea.
Zipline, snowboard.
It's freaking like hoverboard shoes, man.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
if I could just like hover Moon 2 feet off the ground. Yeah. Just
I'm going to make some that have deer hooves that strap on your on the bottom of your feet.
So you're just like stepping on,
you're just stepping on a smaller circumference area. Yep. I'm going
to
do it.
We're about to be rich.
Yeah, we're getting, we got it going on.
And, of course, this idea, the one I never going to happen, and I don't even know why I'm talking about it, but it was when we were out elk hunting. I'm like, this freaking sucks. You know, my short little ass trying to get over this all this deadfall, and I'm like, I'd love to have just a little set of shoes on that I can just turn on and float right up to the top.
I'm with you.
Yeah, it'd be great.
I got one more thing I wouldn't mind touching on with Dustin. So, like, for example, we've got a place down in Cool Camp, and I know a lot, for most hunters, their biggest thing in the summer is summer inventory. Yeah. Did that target buck last year survive? They start growing antlers. They want to check. True. So I think a great question to answer is, I've got all these giant bucks on my farm in November. Why do I not have them in the summer at all? Why aren't they living on my property? What can I do to put them on my property? Or, you know, do just you, where are they? Like, what, why aren't they living
summer
on
in different areas?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You think deer like to eat tender browse, the most palatable food that they can find.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most of your plants,
especially
even
Ozark.
Yeah, especially that's down Ozark, in the rocky terrain, you're fighting for nutrients and you're fighting for every, you know, what's the word?
Calorie.
It's food, cover, water. But what's the word for all of them? You're fighting for
life.
Each of them. They're going to summer in different areas. They want to be stress-free. They don't want to be competing with a lot of other deer. They don't need to be because there's food everywhere. And crops come out.
Yeah.
Leaves fall off. Then you start getting them, you know, fall, or winter shift. Ranges. And then you want to have something attractive. This kind of brings me to something that I believe in that a lot of people don't believe in, but one something attractive for when they start exploring their ranges. You know, you notice later in the summer you might get that one buck that drifts over once just to kind of see or whatever, and then he's gone
for a while. The one that shows up and never enters again. Yeah.
If he comes over and you've done all kinds of new stuff there and there's all this new tender browse either coming up or like you brought it down to the ground with hinge cuts or whatever, he's going to be like, okay, like, I'll shift this way a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
and they'll come see you. I believe that.
So
that, I mean, that's one thing that's
I believe that.
So interesting to me is deer movement, deer you know,
patterns, travel.
What you just said, Dustin, is, I mean, one of our properties last year, we not one of us sitting here, but my brother-in-law harvested a beast and got one photo of the deer 2 years ago, passing through, middle of the night, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, damn, that's a cool deer. But that was the only photo we ever saw of him.
Yep.
Then we had been working on this place, doing a lot of different
attractive,
you know, stuff.
Clearly.
One food plot that we thought would be important because it's different than anything else they eat.
Yep.
Then he started showing up in the summer. And then he did his little disappearing act.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, right back. And he took his last breath on that farm. And it was cool to see that deer slowly move.
To you.
He wasn't living there, but he frequented it again.
You made it to where he would frequent the area. And I mean, I think that's the goal for most people. It's hard, and even to Tristan's point on that farm, how big is your farm? You know, is it 100 acres, 120 acres? How's it lay? How's it run? I mean, those deer could be just 40 acres to the side. You don't know it, but again, making it more attractive, get them back on you. Just increasing the odds always.
That's literally
the key.
What I was talking about, what a lot of people disagree with, is like, when do you want to pump the brakes? Like, when do you want to stop doing stuff? Because season's coming up.
Yeah, I think you can do whatever you want all summer, pretty much.
Yeah, all summer.
I mean,
and for me,
aside from totally transforming your property.
Just freaking having
a
party out
thing,
there every night.
Yeah.
You can get after all your little projects and stay on top of it as frequent as you want this time
of year. A lot of guys, like, I love late season hunting.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think for me, I wouldn't be afraid to do work all the way up until pre-rut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Darn near October. Yeah.
October.
We'll do that.
10th or 15th.
Mm-hmm. Tristan, we've done it.
There's been times where guy I work with, we had a crew of four or five dudes running through acres and acres of timber with chainsaws.
Yeah.
We could do 30 or 40 acres in a day with all of us. That's a stretch. Not that one. That, maybe about half of that. But that very next day, there's deer in there where
like
you were yesterday.
They're curious animals.
Yeah, they're curious. Like, what was that commotion?
And they're not stupid. They know you're gone.
There's a difference between danger and disturbance.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think they know that.
Well, and part of my struggle is...
Too many disturbances, though, will eventually push them out of the picture. You know, if you go through, you doze a house, and then you're building a pond, and you're, you know, doing 30 acres at that, and it's a several-month-long process, you're probably going to disturb them out of the area for a given amount of time until they eventually will circle back within, you know, a year or so. And I've seen that on places, but go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine. I was just saying, part of my struggle and strategy is...
I had a lot of row crop fields, and I can't get to a lot of my stands until those crops are gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then as soon as that's coming out, I'm getting in there, getting the stand set. I've already cut quite a few shooting lanes early summer just because when the growth started, I wanted to make sure, you know, where I was. And so I got to where I can get in there. And then I like, as soon as the crops come out, because something's changed and they get curious. Mm-hmm. And then you're that, or as soon as, you know, someone's done some dirt work, some fresh dirt work.
Oh, they love turn.
They love turn up, you know, dirt, and they just get that curious from it. It might be just for a couple times just to check it out. But I've noticed the buck I've seen in that summer, you know, whether it's a trail cam picture or whatever, they disappear on me for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some success. And that little tweak, little change, and all of a sudden they're curious again and they're back in that area like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, even with the crops, if it's corn, they're going to lose cover and they have to disperse differently and go about their nature. I mean, they're always changing. So, mm-hmm. And then, you know, then there's the variable of humans too on top of it, pushing them around, doing something you might not know they're doing.
Yep.
Someone could be building a house somewhere that, you know.
Yeah. Freaking coyotes running through in the middle of your hunt. Yeah. Yep, yeah. This is over.
Neighbors,
pet dogs. Oof. Yeah, I've had that a lot.
That's about, I don't even want to hunt places like that.
Sounds like there's a touchy feeling there.
Toto come running through.
Yeah, that's bad.
I'm good on that.
No, it's, there's always something changing with your, you know, every property is different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you were saying, Ryan, how big is it? And then, well, I mean, what is it? Is it 200 acres of nothing but row crop and a few ditches? Or is it 200 acres of all timber?
Right.
And I mean,
everybody in here has brought up different scenarios, and we could probably keep going around again and again and again on places we've been and what we've seen and how it's all gone. And to me, what it really comes down to is I've found out that these farm plans are highly educational for people to try to, you know, figure out, like you said, your scenario, have a guy come in that can give you a different outside perspective, hang out with you for a day hand in hand, leave you with a nice map and some things to read over and to kind of just sit on, and then attack it, you know, a little at a time. What can you do this year? What can you do next year? You know, a lot of these guys who hunt together too, you know, four or five men in a group or whatever, you know, the drama that can happen with some of that stuff, or, oh, he says it shouldn't be here and he says it should. And this, you know, I've seen a lot of that stuff. Yeah. So to me, it's like that, this is like the sell all, you know, it's like, if we're going to hunt together, we're going to go off of a third party, but I have, you know, and I've had guys, and I've sold these for guys for purely that benefit, where it's like, you think you want to do this, and you think you want to do this, and you think, and like, they've had me come up just to hang out with them and give them my ideas. I'm like, guys, I can tell you guys all this stuff and you'll agree with all of it, but if you don't have an actual plan on paper that someone made up for you that tells you all this good stuff,
yeah,
it's probably never going to really happen, you know, because it's like year three of hanging out and
we haven't done anything yet. You're going to do the same thing that you've been doing the last.
Yeah. And I've hunted farms where, you know, Micah, you had the great idea 2 years ago, and I didn't want to listen to it because it was your idea 2 years ago, and now it's my idea now, and so now we're going to do it.
You know what I
mean? Yeah. I've seen all those.
Micah
too,
doesn't have great ideas.
Well, exactly. He has no good ideas, so you have to take it from him and make it your good idea, you know, and that's all. I don't know. You have to humble yourself, you know, and to me, I think the biggest thing is it comes down, you have that plan, it gives you something, a checklist, something to work off of, and I've said it, and I'll always say it, increasing the odds, you know, as best as you can for, I don't know, what's a day come out on a 160-acre farm and survey it and do all that stuff? What's that run?
Oh, like what we did that day?
Yeah, for somebody on
$350 or something like that.
Get a print off somewhere around $300 for a good size
for just
farm,
for this, you know? And the day, you know. It kind of depends on how far it is, like how in-depth we get, you know.
Yeah.
An affordable rate nonetheless is my point, I guess, on that. Prices, all that. But there's guys who do it, and, you know, Dustin does it as well. And I'm not trying to turn it into a sales thing, but to me it's you focus on – just making it happen, you know.
Well, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it. Exactly.
If you hunt more than one person, it's going
to
be.
And it's not going to hurt you any to get a professional's opinion. I mean, us three, we can sit around all day long.
I'm not going
to
hire you.
look at YouTube and do or right. do whatever.
Yeah, I could do this. How much would you trust it?
Right.
Do I have a degree to back it? You know what I mean?
I'm not going to hire you to fix a cavity because you're not a dentist.
Exactly. I wouldn't. I'd just get the pliers out.
Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing with this sort of stuff. You know, there are people out there, you know, guys like Landon Legacy, Dustin, I mean, you got a degree in this stuff and you've been doing it now. Yeah. Sounds like for your full-time job for however many years.
Since college. So,
it's I don't know how you kind of explain it. It's you get what you pay
Tristan
for.
Tristan said it's right. worth the money. And I've done it on two farms now with him. Like I said, I sold one to, or helped, I guess call it sold one. I hooked up with another buddy on one because the other thing for me, just like the fact that I'm not discluding anybody else. My brother-in-law is in on the farm with me too, the 160. But, you know, he lets me kind of come up with this good stuff. And then this is how when if he has a buddy up or, you know, I have a guest or somewhere along that nature, it's kind of like, hey, this is what we go off of up here. Mm-hmm. You know,
we have a
north wind today, yeah. So you can hunt these three stands and these will be your access points. And there's no question.
Cool.
You know, there.
Yeah.
To kind of tell listeners what we're looking at, I mean, they got a pretty detailed report.
Probably
should
have done this about an hour ago, my bad.
It's four, five pages long, has maps, has pictures of trails. It kind of goes over, has waypoints of stands and everything. It kind of goes over, like, their different, you know, situational stuff of, where, okay, you got a north wind, these should be your access points to get to these stands, travel areas, what they're seeing, what it should be. They got warm access, cool access, I mean... They got a lot of good information there that it's not just, okay, you got this type of tree over here, you need to be there. They have some situational stuff in these maps and different things. I just looked at it for 2 minutes there for a second. I mean, there's some good information.
Suggested food plot sites, areas to retain native grass, you know, future row crop, you know, hopes, things right. like that. And that's where, again, like this can kind of be your summer checklist as well. And I always have it on hand with me is because it keeps it all fresh of, I do want to move that stand this year. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we have time this year to put in that watering hole or something like that.
It's another potential tool. I mean, and that's not to say you can't figure it out yourself. Right. I mean,
you certainly can. To me, it takes question out of if you're hunting on a farm with multiple people. It's a must-have.
Makes sense.
I think if someone wrote an article about it in like those magazines and everything that everybody reads, because I know we've all read those stories of the guys who make tradition not as fun as it used to be.
Yeah,
that this can kind of help solve some of that for some people.
Makes sense.
If I was in a hunting group that I was kind of starting to feel that way with some guys, I would pay for it myself out of pocket. I wouldn't ask the other five guys in here for the money. I'd just be like, hey. Guys, I got my buddy coming up, and whoever wants to be there because he's going to give us some stuff. And
he's going
to
settle this.
Yeah, he's going to settle it. He's going to settle the score.
Hopefully. Well, yeah, then they say, I don't agree with him.
I think you see it more and more often with, one, land prices. I mean, the way they are, I guess it's more expensive to try to own a piece, like you said. Mm-hmm. More people are going together, and that does create conflict on all those things. Stuff. And this kind of, like you said, it helps with that to where you can identify, okay, this is why we should be doing those. So I don't need you walking in on this side of the farm when I'm trying to hunt here instead to be more beneficial if you're over here. So, I mean, it helps everybody work together, like you were saying.
You break it down to the science, and you can't really argue with it as much.
Yeah.
You know, rather than it's, oh, you're supposed to trust me type of thing. And
another thing you could use this for or not even just if someone went out and got a plan like this, but if you're just trying to manage your property, is you can use things like this and knowledge and experience from people like you, Dustin, and Ryan. You seem pretty damn smart at it, too. I don't know. You don't have a degree in it or whatever.
The degree of
on trying. That, though, even like.
You just
we know what college is about. Yeah. Most of what I know now is from what I've done after college. Right. Yeah. But I got the
you got the piece of paper
because I went to college, right. And then
he gets to sound cooler.
It's, you can also approach.
I got a degree.
You got a degree.
You know, you can also approach adjoining and adjoint landowners and say, "Hey,
absolutely, yeah.
What do you think about maybe? I'm not saying I want to hunt your property or nothing like that, but what if we work together?
And we
turn this whole area into something.
Mm-hmm. There's plenty of neighbors.
You know, this is what I'm looking about doing.
Guaranteed.
I mean, we've all had that happen where if you just talk to the people around you, They're all, for the most
You'll
part,
be surprised.
Trying, and who cares, by the way, if they're not doing the same thing as you're,
sure.
if you're wanting to, let's say,
you're going to find that guys aren't going to want it.
Some will say they are and they're really not.
Yeah.
And some aren't.
And people, you know, people,
it's a daily choice.
I've had it where, I don't know how to say it. Let's say you have a landowner, you want to start trying to get to the point where you harvest mature animals.
Yes.
Okay. The adjacent landowner says, no, I shoot it if I see it. Okay, cool.
That's fine.
And then you hear the argument, well, I'm not going to do that anymore then, I guess, because they're
well,
not doing it.
Yeah.
I would say you manage the property for what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't control what others are doing. And
You just pray you can, they shoot a buck and get out of there.
Yeah.
You can do a couple strips of hinge cutting along their border to try to keep the deer from crossing over the property.
You can definitely do it, but to me, even... it's all about how far you want to go.
But
nine times out of ten, you have that conversation with that landowner, and they're like, hey, yeah.
Yeah, because they might have been thinking the same thing. They're like, well, I'm going to shoot it because I know the neighbor's going to shoot it.
That's what everybody
Everybody has that argument. Well, if I don't shoot it, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, you haven't talked to that neighbor, so you don't know what he's thinking. He might, you know, want to grow them, and also he might have – hey, I got 5 grandkids that come over in here and hunt, and I don't care what
they shoot what they want.
Hey, that's fine.
Need to know. You should know. It's good for you to know for your own farm practices of kind of anticipating. And then here's the deal with what you said. If that's what he tells you, you guys have a good conversation, whatever, then you can go back to that guy and ask, hey, how'd the kids do this year?
You know?
Then you kind of know. Well, and you see the pictures. Oh, shoot, yeah, I had him. I didn't have him
and
on
say
camera,
they,
whatever.
Say they do shoot your target.
It's still hard to go shoot a buck.
Right. Yeah.
Either way, it's not just because they shoot whatever deer they want doesn't mean
they're
going to get the chance still.
And say they do shoot your target buck. At least you're going to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, where'd he go?
Oh,
we never hear from him. So,
my neighbor, he shot a 199
2 years ago. Yeah.
And I watched that deer grow for 3 years, and honestly, it didn't bother me a bit that he shot it. You know, I went out there. Tristan came with me. We showed up. He shot it on opening night of rifle season two years ago. It'll be 2 years ago this November. We went out there, took pictures of it for him, all that stuff. And I didn't really even know him that well. Long story short, he put a trail camera out that week, saw it on there, went to that stand, and shot it. You know, and.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those prime examples of he frequented our area. He was more of a summer pattern on our area.
Yeah.
That last year, he actually happened to be on there more than ever. I mean, and during prime time, I just didn't hunt him that hard. Some of these other things going on, you know, and neighbor shot it. I wanted to go see him.
You know?
It's impressive to see a 199-inch deer, let alone one that
actually
walked hoof on your property, you know. So
right. Those don't exist that
often. You just
often.
Have those, I mean, yeah, you have those conversations and it's just supposed to be a healthy sport, and I think this farm plan helps that, too.
Yeah.
You know, helps keep it healthy.
You'd be surprised how many, quote-unquote, QDMA neighborhoods there are if you just don't be afraid to ask your neighbor. You know?
Today's day and age, we just don't talk to people anymore.
Right.
No,
like, I'm not gonna talk to him because he's an idiot. How do you know that?
He comes up and rifle
you haven't
hunts.
Talked to the guy.
All he does is rifle hunt.
And even then, like, we
see.
Had last
They probably
year.
Shot 4 doe. You don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of people go out and shoot a doe the very first doe they see just because they literally are getting meat in the freezer.
And it goes back to what Tristan was saying in the beginning about
public
ground. Just it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Just enjoy the damn process. We had the same stuff happen last year that Ryan was just talking about, or not yet last year, 2 years ago. So the same time you were dealing with that, my brother-in-law mostly played cat and mouse with this freaking buck for 3 months before rifle season. And opening day of rifle season, these dudes drove up from the south, got on a four-wheeler, drove into the field, got off of it, and shot that deer. And that's life. The deer went south instead of north, and it sucks, and you feel cheated a little bit because you're like, no, I've been, you know, but at the same time.
Wasn't meant to be.
Wasn't meant to be, and he was nice to the guys, and they let him check him out. He got to hold him, you know, hold the rack in his hands, and that's
it's
that.
It's part of the sport, man. We
it's
don't
part
own,
of the sport.
We don't own any of it, and it's just a matter of enjoying it. And so to me, it's I always want to be out there enjoying it, and enjoying it is improving it and the hopes that you're increasing the odds, you know, and being around people, enjoying it, the fellowship and relationships. That's what hunting is about is, you know, we all like to go out ourselves too, but it wouldn't be no fun if I didn't have somebody to call
right.
or him call me, telling you this crazy story. about how the hunt went or dragging one out with them. You just do it yourself all the time. It's
funny. The stories we talk about and tell each other are never the ones that the shot was made.
No, like, not really.
My favorite story from last year is when I called you in the combine because I had my son Chase with me and my little six-year-old son at the time with me. And I had a deer come in that I knew that was just a 3.5-year-old, and I had decided to pass on that deer. Well, when he comes in at 10 yards broadside, and my little one's with me, and I had it on camera, and I'm like, oh, man, should I shoot him?
Yeah.
I sit there, and I'm on the phone with Andy with the deer in front of him,
and he
stupid
calls
freaking deer, apparently. I'm like, hey, should I shoot him?
Yeah. If he's still Chase here after the phone conversation, there's no choice.
And so I decide to pass on him, and the deer walks off, and Chase is like, Daddy, I want to see him again. I want to see him again. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, rattle a little bit again, and turns right back around and comes back to 10 yards broadside again.
Did you have to do that?
So I never shot him.
So thank God you didn't shoot him on the first time. Chase?
Yeah, yeah.
Got to come back, and or he got to see the deer come back and see you call him in, which that's always cool, you know.
And that's a story I'll kind of never forget just because it was his first time going hunting with me.
Seeing a bug.
He got to see a bug at 10 yards.
Mm-hmm. Like Dustin's point, too, calling him back in, he got to experience that. Yeah. I mean, there's more. It's more than just the kill.
The phone call to Andy. It's just all kind of funny.
Yeah, him on the phone
had nothing to do with the kill. And he's like, dude, I don't know. He's literally in a combine, 80 yards away.
I was in the same field as them in the combine. Is the thing is I couldn't see him. He was in the timber.
Yeah,
I wasn't. Yeah, I was. I was right there, and he's calling. He's like, oh, he must have shot one. So I answer. He's like, he's in front of me. What do I do? I'm like, what do you mean?
You're a grown man. I
need some advice. It was.
Well,
I was tearing
it. I know you want me to tell you to shoot it, but I think we
I don't know what you said to me at this point. I don't remember.
I don't know.
You know, it's those stories that, my brother-in-law 2 years ago, or you, Ryan, could have got all bent out of shape. Then why do it anymore? Yeah. You know, you're not always going to be the one that kills them. I mean, it is what it is sometimes, and you know, last year, he was the one that killed him. Mm-hmm. And that's the sport, and that's what's fun about it.
He got tested that day.
Yeah.
He got tested, and he reacted positively, and so the next year, he was the one that got to kill him.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a spiritual side of it all, too, you know, you can't forget about. I mean, a lot of things go into it, but I've enjoyed the summer session here. So
You know, I think a big takeaway, we kind of circle back around everything, is developing the plan. I mean, in the summer, you're capitalized, you're getting a plan on travel patterns, corridors, food sources, water sources, from your guys, what I'm taking away from this conversation is you guys even have it on paper. You have what your plan is and trying to execute that plan come fall.
100%.
Yeah, I guess that would have been a better way to answer in the beginning is work on your plan.
Just work on your plan.
Make sure that you're ready when season comes around. And, you know, that's all encompassing.
Work on your plan, modify it, chip away at it, you know.
And you can do a modified version of this on public ground.
You definitely
this, can. I mean, you can't do stuff on public ground, but you can start looking for those travel areas, start mapping stuff yourself.
Right, Micah, a couple years ago, all you did was on public. Access and mm-hmm. where you want to enter and exit and all that good stuff. So.
Yeah.
Well, I think another thing, though, too, with this just summer, going off past experiences like we were just talking about, like myself personally, I log like every hunt. I think that summer, we're not hunting anything. We're just thinking about hunting.
Yeah.
Log and hunt, I'm talking wind direction, you know, what deer you saw, where, whatever. I think it's a great time to reflect on past experiences to develop game plans, too, you know. I mean,
certainly.
So
finding those annual patterns that might present themselves.
Yeah.
Well, a sample of that, I was watching, it was 3 years ago now. There was a deer who would show up. It was the same barometric pressure switch with the same wind.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my dad before, and I actually jetted out of work early, I said, it's Wednesday, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I was watching, I used that, you know, jury cast or whatever. It was the first year it came out, and I was watching. Mm-hmm. Every time I seen him, it was the same conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Wednesday's it. He's supposed to be there. And it was the Wednesday before rifle season. I said, I have to be there.
Yep.
16 yards.
Got him.
That's where he was. Yep.
You don't log it can that happen stuff, like though. You that. Don't catch it.
You know? No,
yeah. You won't.
You got to log it. I mean, that's
it's
so
all about
crucial.
How far you want to go with it. Yep. I mean, you can go and go and go and go and
you can
narrowing it down, and
you
and
can
the guys who kill a lot of deer do
a lot of storage space
yeah.
on those photos that you keep that you don't think mean shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That you're same. Like, well, I'm gonna keep these photos because you know, in 3 years, you go, okay, he was 2 on this photo, now he's 3.5.
Yeah.
Nice 4.5. Yeah. All right, this year, the last 3 years, I've got that buck on between these this, 3 days.
Yep.
This time of year, you know.
Well, that's the same with the photos, you know, but like, I mean, I used to do everything on paper, but now technology, I just do all notes on my phone. But like, I log stuff that seems like it would never matter. It's like, you know, barometric pressure, wind, obviously all that. But also how much, minus wind direction, how much did the temperature change from the time I got in the stand to how I got out of the stand and what deer I saw?
Yeah.
The stuff you log can become useful
sometimes. I got to do a better job of doing that. I don't log. I think I'll remember everything.
Right, exactly. I was the same way.
I used to a lot more than I do now. I've been in kind of this influx of like getting thrown around from farm to farm. You could call my buddy Chris. He would tell you a whole podcast on how bad it's been.
Get that number.
you might do it. No, seriously. But I want to get back into more of that stuff too, and it is very, very crucial. For me, it's I had to kind of get back into what I'm going to consider my home farm again before I do it, because if you're not really on a particular area or spot, some of that, I mean, what's the use in that information if it's not for your particular deer or place, or if you don't know, you know, if you're going to have access to that land the next year, so why even keep the trail cam pictures? So everybody has different circumstances, but there's always something that you can be doing to improve your odds. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
I think that's kind of the
go door knocking if you don't have anything else to do this time of year.
Yeah,
you know, go
that's
ask
all
a farmer
to
if there's something you can do to help them.
Drive
put some
around
money in front of them. Yeah, go scout. Go.
Yep.
Look in on some public land. I mean, there's always something to be doing. There's no off season. We all know that. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
What did we ever answer the everybody's favorite thing about?
No, we never did. I didn't. I said I'm a host. I didn't say I'm a good host.
Wormhole.
Let's go right back. Yeah, we got into a deep rabbit hole and we stayed in it. Is what we did. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
What were we talking about?
What was this again? Something about deer and stuff. I don't.
Who was it?
Yeah. What's a podcast?
What's a podcast? Yeah, I mean that's kind of cool because we pretty much talked about property and how you manage it for deer, but we've gotten some interesting answers when I asked this question. So. I'll ask the three of you an hour and a half late, but hey, we're going to ask. Brian, what's your favorite thing about the outdoors in the state of Missouri?
There's just so many opportunities for it that it's hard to really narrow down to one thing. So I'll pretty much say you can enjoy it all out here, all four seasons. You know, there's something to do. The scenery, you can go down the lake in the summer. You can fish in the fall or spring and hunt. Turkey and deer. I mean, it's just all that wrapped up into one little spot for me is just no reason to go anywhere else.
Yeah.
So,
it's got it all.
Yeah, it has everything I need.
Yep.
About you, Dustin?
Along the lines of diversity, for me, it's more the diversity as you move from one corner of the state and across the state.
Yeah.
So north of the Missouri River, we have the glacial till plains, and then you get into your Ozark ground, and then you've got the basin down in the Boot Heel. And then for us that have hunted along the Missouri River.
What's the east over there? Illinois, kind of?
Yeah, it starts getting a little more.
Rot-hilly. You're
approaching the Smokies over there.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what it was, yeah.
But
no,
like,
you're right.
Like the Missouri River bottoms. If you've ever hunted the Missouri River bottoms, a lot of that public land's along there. And in my opinion, you get it in the Ozarks too, but it's the. If you're out there on a day where there's not a whole lot of people around, like. It's the wildest place that you can get in Missouri where there's not anybody close to you for miles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
you're
so
out there alone.
That's kind of my.
You can get away from
it's your favorite
it all.
Thing.
Yeah. The differences in terrain as you move across.
I'm with you.
Mostly north to south. But
I've said several times, we'll get to you, Tristan. Like, Missouri is five states that come together one place.
Yep.
You know? We're partial because we're all from here. I get that.
Yeah, but we've been around. We've all been places.
There's cool places. I mean, Iowa's got the biggest freaking deer in this world. But what I love about our state is you can be, like you said, you know, Pike County up in northeast Missouri. You can be down in, Springfield area, Branson area, and be in a totally different world.
Prairie.
In the same state.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what's cool. Mm-hmm. Other states have some of those offerings. I mean, even like we were just talking about Iowa. You got the two rivers on the east and the west side that really have some cool stuff as well. But it's just it's all that stuff kind of converges in our state. And that's what I think that's cool about it. But,
and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Tristan, how about you, man?
That's, I mean, the diversity of the land's got to be one of my favorites as well. But, I mean, minus the abundance of our wildlife populations and how big we can grow our deer, you know, when we have the opportunity to do that, it's a hunting episode. But in my opinion, fishing, the fishing in Missouri is outstanding. We have people, we don't realize it, but we have people that come from all over to fish in Missouri.
Yep.
Not just the size of our fish, but, you know, the abundance of species. We got different species of catchers. An opportunity for everyone. And then the beauty of our lakes as well. I mean, it's an awesome place to fish and come visit. So
yeah.
To touch on that, it was just in, was it Bassmaster magazine? It was like one of the top five. Lake of the Ozarks is like one of the top five in the nation, maybe bass fishing lakes. And then Doug, in our earlier episode, he mentioned, what, a buddy from Japan was flying in to fish, a Missouri. Tournament here in Missouri. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, Doug Vomber is a professional bass fisher.
And Table Rock, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was down there. I was on vacation down there this last week. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It's
and awesome. That's what's cool. I mean, you can, you know, bass, obviously, and then you got trout, walleye. You can fish.
Oh, yeah.
Many different
fish,
species.
Alligator gar.
Yeah. My nephew got into that.
Noodle, everything. Trot lines, rivers, lakes.
Yeah.
Oceans.
It's just very diverse in its water. It gets overlooked, I feel like.
Bear coming.
Hey, bear.
Hey, yeah. I want them to keep overlooking it.
That's
right. No, I agree with you, kind of.
Yeah, that's right. We don't have any animals. There's no
opportunity.
There's nothing here.
Nothing to do.
The best thing about it is nothing.
Yeah. Well, that's a good spot to end. Before we hop off, we will include some show links also on the release, but do you guys want to give
any handles out?
Social media like pages or whatever for Midwest Wildlife for yourselves?
At Midwest Wildlife. That's the Facebook and YouTube, Instagram, and then the YouTube's Midwest Wildlife Productions. So.
Okay. Right on.
Just hanging out.
Telling you. So you're planning on doing this coyote hunt again next year?
We are, yeah. We have to do that.
Folks,
we got the
if you're anywhere around.
Elimination.
Yeah, I didn't get to go either, so hopefully I'll make it this year.
What was that about?
I'm a wrestling coach, man. That's right. Tournament.
Yeah, the tournament. Yeah, it's. I don't even think I was supposed to get to go, and then something changed.
No, we're definitely planning on it.
I think that's why maybe like state probably wrestling time. Maybe I think that's might have been where I was.
Oh, yeah, you were killing. Killing was a killing.
It was state wrestling.
Or no, it was sectionals.
It was state, like that.
It was sectionals.
It was sectionals?
Yeah. Yeah, because you were giving me freaking play-by-play.
That probably was.
Because I watched his match on your phone.
Yep.
That's what happened. Funny how memories happen. But anyway.
Wrestling.
Yep.
Well, I think we could talk to these guys for days here. So
yeah, we could. We'll have you on
save
again.
Another episode.
Yeah, we'll do it again. We were a little rusty to get going, but it worked out real well.
This is what's fun about them. You talk about different stuff. You know, we sat there about robots and talked about this thing. It's not as fun, in my opinion. I mean, I guess we'll find out if people listen to it.
See if people like it or not, but, you know, it's fun.
Yeah. So, anyway, we really appreciate you guys coming on.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll holler at y'all later.
Yep.
All right. See you guys.
Thank you.
All right. That's that.
And this is this.
All folks.
You got anything stupid to say, Micah?
No. I don't know.
That was a good show, guys.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. You learn a lot. I mean, just by talking to different people, which is what's cool about the show we do. You know, Ryan talking about natural water for them. That's something I've never really thought of, because anywhere I've ever hunted has had water.
Right.
But it's usually moving water. And
when you go back and look at it, yeah, I've thought about all my setups and my travel patterns I watch. There's usually water pretty near. I mean, that's not maybe a reasoning why I did something, but
yeah,
it's there.
But for him, that's one of his main things that he focuses at doing is, and it, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's maybe something to think about. You know, just stuff for people to think about, some ideas on their properties, or even if you're hunting public land, you can look at doing, you can't obviously go in and do things, but you can work on, hey, if this were my place, what are some things I would look for, and try to go find them on that public land and, you know, help yourself, be successful. So,
well, I think putting things on maps, putting things on paper is a big thing I took away from it. Was they had that plan there, and it was about 5 pages long of just different scenarios. This is this is that, and then sticking to that. And then Tristan talked about it making notes, you know, documenting things.
Yeah, keeping a log of every hunt and everything that he's done. So,
yeah, which is something I'm not good at, and a lot of people I'm sure aren't good at, but it's a great idea. Can it really help you. So,
but yeah, also one thing we wanted to mention, Dustin, he wanted us to give a shout out for his business, I guess you would call it. It's called Habitat Works, and you can get a hold of him at 816-752-7390. Yeah. Or you can give him an email at habitatworksllc@gmail.com.
Yeah, and give the guys over at Midwest Wildlife a follow and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, if you want to get through information through them, too.
We'll link some stuff, but you know, if you just go search Midwest Wildlife on Facebook, Instagram, you'll find them.
And it sounds like what Dustin will do is come out to your property, spend some time with you.
Get a plan.
Kind of get that plan that he's talking about together and give you that plan. To hunt with your buddies, hunt with different people. So, kind of advise. He won't do it. I mean, sure, he'll do it for you if you, you know, the money, right? but he'll advise you kind of on what you should do.
Yeah. So maybe somebody just buying a property and they don't know where to start might want to give him a call and he can kind of point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like a really knowledgeable guy. I mean, has a degree in this stuff and has been doing it ever since getting out of school. So,
so it's a good time. Like-minded people, we could have talked for days.
Oh, yeah.
But it's always fun to sit down with, like I said, like-minded people, sharing the passion.
Yep. That's what it's about. And this is why we started this whole deal. Talk like to people like these guys that are normal people just like us, normal people just like everybody listening. And, you know, if you gain one little tidbit of knowledge from an episode or had fun, one or the other, then that's a win for me, right?
Right. I go for the fun aspect. I don't care if you don't learn anything.
I'm not a very good learner.
Okay. See ya.
All right. See you guys.